You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We can also be heard on the World Wide Web right here from our studio, our socially distanced studio in Cocoa, Florida.
Yes, and you can also hear us on the web under 1510wwbc.com. You can click that on-demand button, and you can get us directly right here live. And we're also on 4 radio stations locally, and then all of our shows are archived on cedamediainc.com, so you can actually replay them if you'd like to.
Right, and for those who are just tuning in for the first time to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, every Monday, Ellen and I meet here in the studio. It's a bit of an extension of our living rooms where we can meet and greet and chat and have conversations about kitchen table topics, things that are going on in your home, around the nation, right here in Brevard. And we kind of make this our kitchen table, except we don't have a sink.
That's right? All that's missing.
And we don't have food cooking. So we have a great show planned today. Our lineup first is going to be a gentleman by the name of Mr. Michael Phillips, and he's going to be calling in from Detroit. He founded a Facebook group called Father's First Movement. He also has a YouTube channel, and he's on Instagram. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about why he thinks more men should be embracing fatherhood, which I think is a pretty good subject, especially right now around Christmas time when people are torn apart from COVID-19 and so many people are losing jobs. We would hear from Michael why more men should get involved in their children's lives. And then the second segment, our good friend, Dr. Lisa Soto, the executive director of the Marine Resource Council here in Melbourne, will be giving us an update about the health of the Indian River Lagoon and more. Welcome. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you've been one of our longtime supporters of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we actually enjoy listening to you and learning and hearing so much about the Indian River Lagoon and what we can do to keep it healthy.
Thank you.
And thriving, right, Miss Ellen?
That's right. I think Sita and I have both made changes. Even some of the changes that Dr. Biggie wanted Sita to make, I think Sita probably did.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you get older, you get wiser.
That's right.
And you get bolder as well, and you learn things. And I think it's great to learn things, but you also have to act on it.
That's right. And people don't realize the ripple effect is such a powerful thing. Not to pun on the lagoon, right? But the ripple effect is so important. We do one small thing in our families, in our homes, and our habits of what we do every day, and then all of a sudden our neighbors start doing it, and two times two, four times four.
And it's going to take all of us to bring our estuary back to health. We all have to play a part.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And it's important. I mean, when you learn something, if you don't act on it, what's the use of learning, right? And the Marine Resource Council have a lot of events. You guys have a lot
we
of
used
stuff
to.
That people can learn from.
Before the COVID time.
Now we're all Zooming. I think if anybody was getting a stock tip, they should probably be looking into Zoom or those, you know, like all of those channels that are keeping
we
us.
We should have.
If only we had known, we would have all invested in Zoom.
Right. Exactly.
I had no idea that it would be so popular.
Yep. You know, FaceTime. What are the other ones that are out there? There's a bunch of them.
Well, even Facebook has one now where you could create a group, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, so, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about before Michael Phillips call in, the COVID-19 vaccine, right? A lot of people are saying the vaccine is going to be available And there was a big discussion going on Facebook the other day, who is going to take the vaccine and who's not. And I said, once the vaccine is proven safe by Dr. Fauci, who I love listening to, I'm going to take it because I work in healthcare. And I think people who work in healthcare, such as myself in nursing homes and rehab centers and our patients, we're probably going to be some of the people for the first, we'll be getting it first. Right? I see you shaking
I would
your
think
head.
So, yes. Yeah. So probably, you need to.
So let's quickly, will you be taking it, you think, once it's deemed safe?
Will I take the vaccine? Absolutely.
Ellen?
See, I'm not a vaccine person, so I've never taken a vaccine.
Never. The flu shot?
Never flu shot.
Do you know I've taken the flu shot every single year for the last, whatever, 15, 20 years?
Never a flu shot, anything.
I'm fine because we work with the elderly. We have to, know.
Yeah, and I've never been in a position that I've, because of my job, that I needed to or that it was, and knock on wood, stayed healthy. So,
well,
I'm gonna stick with
that eyes
plan.
Are on the vaccine.
Absolutely.
And I feel kind of good that there's a light at the end of the tunnel for people because so many people have lost their jobs. So many people... are wondering what they're going to do for Christmas. How are they going to put presents under the tree for their children? And I think, thank God for the scientists who are using common sense plus policy to bring this vaccine for us, right?
Yes.
You know?
Thank God for science.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Americans came together after 9/11. We lost 3,000 people, maybe 3,000 and something. And in this instance with COVID-19, we lost over 250,000 people. And you still had people who didn't want to come together and say, there is a war. This virus is a war. The COVID-19, to me, is the war in the world. So, you know, I just feel like it's important that we talk about that sometimes and how grateful we are to the scientists. But I just wanted, you know, before we go to Mr. Michael Phillips, I read something on Facebook a couple days ago. And we all talk about peace on earth. We talk about goodwill towards men. And people write on the headstones when people die, they write, rest in peace. And I said, wait a second, why don't we all start preaching, live in peace as well? Right? And there's certain way, because we're watching what's happening with COVID-19. Mental issues are on the forefront of so many people's lives right now. People are having a lot of trouble coping because they're facing such challenges and struggles. And I read something the other day, and it was about Christmas being the time of love and friendship and peace and forgiveness. And what I read was, it says, the first to apologize is the bravest, the first to forgive is the strongest, and the first to forget is the happiest. And I thought, that is so true, that we should all be saying that around Christmas time, because a lot of families, believe it or not, are being torn apart by this virus. Because people are arguing with each other, who's
the
wearing
virus,
the mask.
By politics, by everything. There's a lot of division going on.
Right, and if we want to be happy, there are three things that we probably should all be promoting, and it's peace, purpose, and happiness. Mm-hmm. Put in value on lives. And one such person that I met through my Facebook traveling was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Michael Phillips, who have found his purpose on earth. And he founded the Father's First Movement. And I think he's on the phone and he's calling in. So hello, Mr. Phillips. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and friends here Florida.
No problem. No problem at all.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and how's the weather in Michigan? Are you in Detroit?
Yes.
Is it snowing?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's raining real slash snowing. It's doing both.
Oh, okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, my name is Michael Phillips. I'm born and raised in Detroit. I grew up playing football and basketball. I completed high school. I have a fiance and two beautiful children. Right now, I'm unemployed, you know, due to the COVID-19. And so far, I'm managing.
I told you earlier, this is when people become very resourceful. And they know how to make rice and beans stretch for 7 days.
Right. Okay. So it's back to the basics. You know, me growing up and the struggles that I have survived. And, you know, times like this, I've been in times like this where, you know, it wasn't no money coming in and we had to survive with the things that we had. So this is nothing new to me when it comes to, you know, hard times. But now that I'm grown and resourceful, I know how to make a way. I know how to get out and still bring in some type of income.
You're being a dad. So you were working with Chrysler, and then you lost your job through COVID-19. What happened?
Yes, well, when they shut everything down and they wanted to bring the plants back open, they wanted to open the plants back up. And basically, Chrysler had told us, they were saying how, hey, you know, we don't. What I got from it was they didn't care about no one having no babysitters. You know, daycares was closed. Everything was closed. So if you couldn't even get to work, you know, without, you know, having baby or daycare issues, that it didn't matter. They was going to fire you regardless.
Oh, that's awful. And, so they didn't have, because, you know, the essential workers had it pretty bad, because people who could stay home and work from a computer, they were still able to keep their jobs and watch their kids and do homeschooling. But I think this was one of the things that we heard on the campaign trail, that essential workers didn't have the support system so that they could continue working in jobs and have the daycare and have somebody to watch their kids and all that. So, you know, what you're talking about, a lot of Americans face that challenge for the last few months, you know? So you founded a group called the Fathers First Movement. I mean, you're very young, and everybody talks about finding a purpose in life, but it seems as though you've used your experience to form this group, because you had a moment when you said, let me do something to help humanity. So what happened? Right. How did you come up with the Fathers First Movement?
So, well, during this, COVID-19, you know, and during the shutdown, you know, being at home with my kids and things like that, I was in a, in a depression stage to where, you know, I wasn't going back to work, okay, because I can't get my kids sick. So I can't afford to get sick and bring it home and get them sick, you know. So I was in a depression stage. I have lost brothers that's been my age and has babies my age. And, you know, I was feeling so bad and down. And I said, hey, the only things that make me happy and that keep me going is my kids. So that was like my kids and me losing my brothers and, you know, and wanting to keep their name alive and give their kids something, you know, to be a part of for when they get older and things like that. I was going to come out with a Father First clothing. But I said, hey, my generation, and I see a lot of guys stepping up being a father, and I love being a father. I'm going to make it a movement. This movement is going to touch the ones that's feeling depressed, that's feeling like, you know, they ready to give up, and that's feeling like, you know, because during the COVID-19, a lot of sacrifices is being made. So me quitting Chrysler or me getting fired, it was the best thing that can happen to me, because I chose my family over a job.
Yes.
I chose my, right. So it's like, okay, either I go to work and risk them for getting sick or, you know, I quit working, become resourceful and try to make a way and bring in the income for my family. And I chose that route because I chose my kids. And I felt like if I can do that, it's other fathers that's thinking just like me.
Right.
You know, so.
But you touch on something important, because, you know, there is something called seasonal affective disorder, where people get depressed, and so many people are trying to protect their mental health during this pandemic. And one of the things that people are doing is actually gardening, becoming resourceful, reaching out to each other, communicating, trying to put value on people's lives. And it sounds like you're doing all of that.
Right. So with the Father First Movement, and like you just said, you know, people is resourcing and coming up with these ideas and things like that. The movement is to keep us together. We all are fathers. It's not just no, you know, just for all black thing or race thing or go against the women. This is an all fathers thing, to where we can come and connect. And we can, not only that we only come and connect, we can bring our kids. And let's start making decisions, and let's start coming up with businesses. Let's start coming up with ideas how we're going to continue to provide for them. Like, let's give each other help. Let's give each other, you know, mentoring help if we need it. Let's give each other encouragement if we need it to keep going. Let's give each other ideas to to expand your mind to become successful without working, or even if you is working, you know, let's continue to give that motivation. You know, so things like that. So the movement, the Father First movement is big because it brings the awareness to fatherhood. It's trying to get the men, you know, to bring down the crime rate as well.
Yes.
You know, it touches so much. The Father First movement, you know, it touches so much to where, like, if you get us men to focus on our kids is our everything. You know, crime rate will go down, just like for the cops, just like for the guys that get pulled over. You know, follow. It's like this. If I make this better decision to see tomorrow, not only that I get to see tomorrow, I get to see my kids tomorrow.
Yeah, you know? so you're giving hope. What you're doing is you have hope for the future. But, you know, it really all starts at home. You know, we have people that talk about the foundation for humanity, for mankind, starts in the home. And you're actually living that and proving that because, you know, we see so many bad news all the time in the news where people get shot and, you know, people lose a loved one in at the hands of the police or something. But you're saying, mm-hmm. let's stop all of that and start at home with watching the kids, raising the kids, setting an example for the children.
Right. See, the women, the mothers have been doing this so long. And how the system is now, they pushes the man out of the house to make him go work. Right? So now that he's out the house or, you know, he's in jail or anything like that, the mother is at home by herself doing all of that. So I'm here to encourage the fathers to, you know, you be at home as well. And be hands-on. See, a lot of people hear from me and ask me, like, well, are you with your kids or do you live with? And I tell them, yes. You know, I'm going to be an example first. In order to lead, you have to follow.
Right. Well, that's called leadership. It's called leadership. You're taking charge, right?
Yes,
so, ma'am. So how long have you been, how long has the movement been in existence?
The movement has been in existence since last year. But it didn't start taking off in just a few months ago. You know, so as soon as I started the Father First movement, it was in May.
Yes.
May. Right. I have completed a lot of things fast. I have completed two events during the COVID-19, and I followed the COVID-19 protocol. I did an interview with my news station up here. They reached out to me, Fox 2 News. You can still see that interview on Fox 2 News Detroit.
Yep, we posted that for all of our Facebook people.
Yeah, that was Ellen just posted it. Yeah, tell them what you put it.
Yeah, we put it on our Facebook page, and it will also be part of our blog as we put it out on cetamediainc.com.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Trying to get you as much exposure to this because we really believe in you.
Yeah, and so are you partnering up with any businesses? Because we hear about other movements for fathers, but yours is a little bit different. You know, there's a father's rights movement, and yours is the Father's First movement, not to be confused. How does the two differ?
Well, with the Father's First movement, a lot comes with the movement. Just for somebody to be a part of the movement, I have to see and ask them, you know, for one, how do they feel about being a father? Then I ask them, you know, what are you doing to provide for your family, for your kids? Three, I ask them, you know, because if you don't have a job, I want to help you. I want to help you build a resume, help you get a job, you know, help you do everything you need to do to get a job. Then I go with asking them, you know, do you have your side of custody? If you don't have your side of custody, I want to help you get your side of custody. You know, if you own child support, right, let's let the judge know what you can afford. So my movement is to steer the man, right? Because, you know, being there and living with the babies is one thing, but following the law is another thing. So when a mother has the child, she has sole custody. That's just by law. So a lot of fathers doesn't know that, and a lot of fathers don't have that knowledge. And I want to help them get that knowledge. I want to spread that knowledge to them. You know, even if you guys are married, even if you guys, you know, just in a relationship, y'all on good terms, you know, you have to establish your side of custody, you know. Or and if you if your mother of the baby or your kids, you know, need the insurance and they have to get it off the state insurance, you know, you let the judge know what you can afford as far as child support. You know, let's stop running from the system. That's because the system was already. So the movement, it's a big difference from any other type of program.
Right.
And a lot of people has a lot of people. It's like they want to reach out to me. But then again, it's like, okay, because it's like, cause I'm still building. Like, because I have, like, just up here in my city, everywhere I go now, they know me. You know, it's like I'm a public figure.
Yeah. Well, you what you're doing is you're setting up people to succeed.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. You don't, you've seen so many failures in your lifetime. And in your bio, you said you had a lot of challenges growing up in Detroit. Was your father involved in your life there?
Yeah, well, I grew up, my story is kind of interesting. A lot of people say that because I grew up, experienced both parents in the household, you know, all the way until I was 14 years old. And we never had a struggle. I started seeing the struggle when my mom left my dad. And that's when we started experiencing hard times and hard struggles because she's trying to take care of 8 kids by herself. And the father, at the time, I'm a junior, so I used to protect him until I started seeing it myself, like, hey, he really don't care. Or, hey, he not coming around no more. You know, we don't have no food in the house. Our lights is off. You know, I have to walk all the way to school and walk all the way home. So those challenges, you know, it traumatized me in a way. But the father first movement, any type of guy that even experienced a thing like that, that I have experienced or anything that grew up without a father, it's to, you know, not just cry about it. Let's start being the fathers that we wanted our fathers to be. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, we understand what you're saying. Hello? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So
yes.
If somebody wanted to follow the Father's First Movement, how can they join and see where you're having your events and and do you plan to extend in other states?
Yes, ma'am. First, if somebody want to follow the movement or even have a conversation with me about the movement and things like that, I have all the social media. I will be creating a website today. But on YouTube, it's Father's First Movement. On Facebook, it's Father's First Movement. On Instagram, it's Father's First Movement. Even when you type that in, I'm going to be the first person that's going to pop up because I'm the only one in this world that has started this movement.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and I'd like to say, you know, one of the ways, you know, just is just coming from a 55 plus lady over here in Florida who have children of my own, you know, of course, ladies have conversations as well. And we try to steer people in the right direction. One of the things that you could also be doing is, you know, planning families is important as well. Because when
yes.
you plan families, you're able to plan for the future of your unborn child, which
right.
includes, you know, things like you have to think about income inequality. You have to think about health care.
Right.
You have to think about
right.
a mortgage or rent. Who's going to pay the utilities? How are you going to educate the child? Wouldn't you say, right? So part
oh, yeah.
of
it's,
your movement should right. be education so that people who want to become a father would think about these things as well.
Right. See, up here, I have so many people that's a part of my movement that doesn't even have kids yet.
Yes.
Okay, and they wanted to become a part of it. And as they wanted to become, I educate them on, I'm not telling men to go out there and, you know, you have a baby. I'm educating them on the steps and the things that you have to do before you even have a child out here. You have to be able to take care of yourself first. Before you can take care of anybody else. So I'm blessed and able to have young men under me, you know, where I'm able to educate them and keep them on the right track as far as, you know, finding themselves, you know, working, you know, saving money. You be successful first before you bring in a child. Let's not make the same mistakes other people make it because everybody is on their own time and has their own story in life.
We understand.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
But if you can...
So since starting your journey with the Father's First Movement, obviously it's impacted you in a very positive manner. What would you say to some to people who are sitting, you know, around saying, "Hey, I want to do something, but I don't know how to get started"? You just said to yourself, "I'm going to make a difference," and you're doing it. So, what advice would you give to someone who's got great ideas such as yourself, but they're saying, "Gee, I don't know if I could do it"?
And that second guessing yourself is where they're going wrong at. You know, you believe in yourself, you trust yourself. You know, just as much hard work we put in for working for others, we also have to put that same hard work and trust in for ourselves.
That's correct.
So, far as like you have stated, you know, how I'd want to get it to other states, I recently have people reached out to me from L.A., California, people in Georgia, people in Florida. You know, I have sent out the First Movement merch, you know, to them guys that have reached out to me, you know, to bring the awareness to the movement, and I do let them know about the movement. My goals is to take it state to state, because this not just no, you know, this city thing. This not just a Detroit city thing. This is a movement for all fathers. And my goal is to have Father First daycares. You know, it's to help us men in a strong way.
Right, and you know what? We need more people like you who father children and say it takes more than just writing a check to be a father. You have to be physically present to be a dad, like you're saying, and you have to lead by example. And when you do that, you're not just helping yourself, but you're helping the planet, you're helping the world. And we really applaud you for what you're doing, and your story is just intriguing, and I will send you some contact phone numbers for people in other states who would be able to help you as well, because I also have a lot of people that reach out to us from LA and all over the place that would like to call in on the show. But what you're doing is you're walking the walk, you're not just talking the talk.
Yes, I'm walking the walk. Like, you know, this movement and me being a father, I'm always busy. Because no matter how busy I am, I still take care of my family at home, you know, so.
Well, it is such an admirable thing. Yeah, it's such an admirable thing that you've done, Michael, and we are going to share all of your information. And like Sita said, we'll get you in touch with some folks that have helped out on the radio show as well as are interested in making sure that this type of a movement gets out to everybody, because the education and the support from other fathers is really super important. So thank you so much. The time always goes so quickly.
Yeah, and we love your pictures on your Facebook feed as well. Yeah. And when you do a father-daughter dance, we want to come. So you'll
that's
have
coming up.
Yeah, well,
yes,
you
that is very coming up.
When you do the one after COVID, where we could fly to Detroit, I would love to come. So you'll have to tell Ellen and I and my friend Dr. Lisa Soto. I know you have good music, so we'll come up there and dance with you.
Okay, that will be awesome. Yeah. And with the COVID-19 and the shutting down, it did prolong, you know, things like that, because I was going to do my Father First Movement in March. I have over 300 people up here with me, behind me, alone, in my own city.
That's awesome.
If I say, you know, we have to be here, they all are coming.
That's awesome. We hope that you continue to have that great support. Unfortunately, we got to take a quick station break. And thank you, Michael Phillips, for calling in from Father's First Movement. And we're going to be right back after these quick messages from our sponsors. Please join us.
And Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9, that's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for cloud 9, mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're also heard on AM 1510 and on the World Wide Web. During the break, we were talking about the true meaning of Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I was saying to Ellen and Dr. Lisa Soto that, you know, in Trinidad and Tobago, where I grew up, we celebrate all cultures and all religions and all Christmas and Christmas holidays and everything that goes with Christmas, right? And it used to be that people would say Christmas was about the birth of the Christ and they would reflect on their lives and forgive and have peace on earth. But all of a sudden, it became where everybody wanted to drink booze and dance and have a good time. And I'm one of those, too. So anyways, but yeah, that's what we were chatting about. But our second guest today is Dr. Lisa Soto. She is the executive director here in Melbourne, Florida, of the Marine Resource Council. And she's going to give us an update about the health of the Indian River Lagoon. She did grow up here in Melbourne. You grew up in Melbourne, right? You went to FIT?
I was like, No.
What did you do at FIT?
I was adjunct faculty.
That's right. I have something about you at FIT.
Yeah, I grew up in South Florida in Broward.
And so you have, you completed your bachelor's degree at Florida State. Oh, moved to Brevard after that.
Perfect. I did.
Perfect. And here you are doing good stuff at the Indian for us, helping us to understand what happened to the Indian River Lagoon? Why is it so brown? Why do we have so many people that don't listen? And what can we do to improve the health? So tell us.
There's an awful lot of why questions.
Yeah. and we see it, right? We see it.
Wake up every morning and go, why?
Right. Why? So what's going on with the Indian River Lagoon?
Well, we're going to release our next report card. It's always an exciting time of year. You know, every year we get the state agency data that really measures four different water quality parameters and one habitat parameter, and that's seagrass. So we look at two nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus, how they impact algae blooms, which is measured by chlorophyll A, and then how dark that makes the water, which is measured by turbidity, and then ultimately how that impacts the seagrass, which is growing on the bottom of the estuary and is the most important foundational part of the food chain. So these four parameters in the seagrass, making it the fifth parameter, we compare it with the regulatory targets. And every year we release our report. So we're about to release our report. It'll be coming out on next Tuesday, December the 8th. We're going to do a very small in-person presentation at lunch and a very small in-person presentation at dinner. And it'll also be available as a webinar online for those who are still trying to stay home and away from even social distanced groups. You can watch it for a love donation online.
Yeah. So your professional career spans over 20 years trying to improve the Florida water quality. You worked also with the EPA at one time. Tell our listeners a little bit about what exactly is groundwater, because a lot of people don't understand what that is.
Yeah, so water that falls out of the sky and hits the ground in the form of rain is called stormwater. So that's the stuff that's kind of flowing across the land after it rains down down the drain, goes down the street, come off of your sidewalk, and so on. What soaks into the yard and soaks into the ground is replenishing an aquifer that we call that groundwater. It's water that's in the ground. And here in Brevard County, we're right along the coast. So we've got groundwater, you know, in my yard downtown, it's probably at about 18 inches. You know, groundwater is very close to the surface here in Brevard County. And in most coastal counties, the groundwater is very close to the surface and it can get contaminated easily. So, you know, leaving your pet waste on top of the ground and not ever picking it up, people just assume it's going to get broken down. Well, not all of it gets broken down. Some of it will reach your groundwater. And then we've got all kinds of infrastructure that is, in most cases, under groundwater, like our sewage lines and our drinking water lines. I mean, in some cases, those are actually submerged in groundwater. And if the sewer line breaks underground, it's leaking that sewer water untreated,
yes,
right into the groundwater. And it can be a really bad source of contamination, not only of those nutrients that fuel algae blooms, but of bacteria and all those other nasties that are in the waste stream. So sewer lines that are breaking are a problem, and that they leak those horrible toxins into the groundwater. And they're a problem because when it rains, those need to be, vented, and they just discharge, in some cases, tens of millions, if not 100 million gallons of untreated sewage into our creeks and rivers.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't even understand what is muck and how do we manage muck. So tell them, what is muck and how do we manage it?
Yeah, well, muck, the only way to manage it really at this point is to get it out of the bottom of the lagoon. Muck is that black ooze. We used to call it ooze decades ago. It's that black mayonnaise that's on the bottom of the lagoon. It enters through the storm system. It comes in. It's organic material. Some of it's a little oily. It's just, you know, gross, broken down organic material that's coming in through the storm drain. So things like grass clippings, leaf debris.
Fertilizes.
Some people think about blowing their grass clippings down the storm drain. Don't do that, because that's going to just break down and cause more muck. Fertilizers that run off. A lot of fertilizer goes through into groundwater. We're finding fertilizer in groundwater. Muck is just this breaking down of all the nasty organics that are going down the storm drain.
Yep.
It comes in through canals. It comes in through the storm system. And it's covering the lagoon. In some cases, it's like 9 feet deep. To imagine falling into a 10-foot hole of black ooze,
yeah,
you could die.
Yeah.
You could get stuck in there.
Yeah, you won't be able to
and
breathe.
Never get out.
Yeah.
So the county, you know, part of the sales tax that we passed here in Brevard, at least back in 2016, a lot of that money is going to muck removal. You know, people keep asking me, what are we doing with the sales tax? Why isn't the lagoon fixed by now? And, you know, honestly, It's going to take a long time for it to be fixed, and they're just really getting started. These big muck removal projects are, you know, tens of millions of dollars each. They take years of permitting to get started, and they're just really starting to get started on some of these big infrastructure projects. And that's what it's going to take.
And I can tell you the O'Galley area, because I do stand up paddleboarding in that area. And I remember a few years ago getting off my paddleboard, you know, just to kind of take a dip and stepping and going up to my knee in that mayonnaise. And went recently, not that long ago, and it wasn't as bad. I mean, it was still sort of there, but it certainly wasn't as bad as it was. So kudos to that particular area because I know they've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah, they did. That was the St. John's River Water Management District. So that was a project that was started before the sales tax, which is the way they were able to get that done.
And if you notice, so, you know, when you drive by there, when you go over that bridge by that new restaurant for Gates, you can see it's cleaner.
Yeah,
like it has a different color.
Yeah.
And then you get over the bridge and then you can see that there's a little bit of difference, but that's areas that they haven't touched yet. So you can definitely start seeing the progress. At least, you know, in the coloring and so forth and so on. So I hope everybody's recognizing that. And in those same questions, when they're asking, what are we doing with the money? Hopefully people are starting to see it, because I know I've seen it.
Well, we should be doing our part too, right? Mm-hmm. And so what you guys are also doing with the Marine Resource Council, you're growing the native plants for the shorelines.
Mangroves, yeah.
And how is that going? I mean,
it's going great. So we've had, you know, we've had better years. You know, 2020 has been not the best year for MRC. We started out really, really well. We were able to support our senator up in Tallahassee as she passed the Clean Waters Ways Act. So that's awesome. That's a feel good. You know, got a win on that one. And then I think we did one event. You know, we do a lot of events, and there's a couple of reasons for it. One is it's just great to hang around with people and drink alcohol. No, I'm kidding.
Back to our Christmas.
It goes a long way.
But it's, you know, those, you know, your people, right? Your members, the people that you talk to or you see their emails, and you never get to meet them face-to-face. So it's just nice to actually get to finally in a room with people and really have meaningful conversations.
And, you know, you light up like a Christmas tree when you talk about the Indian River Lagoon. You really do. You love this stuff. So somebody asked us, is it safe to swim in the lagoon?
Well, that's a darn good question. So one of the things you'll notice that we're not looking at in the report card is bacteria. So when we're talking about lagoon health, we are talking about what the state has determined to measure for the purposes of determining whether the lagoon is healthy. The state has not determined that bacteria is one of the things that's keeping the lagoon healthy, but it's one of the things that keeps us humans healthy. So the only time, as far as I can tell, that the state is monitoring for bacteria is either if there's a shellfish harvesting in the area. So if somebody's growing clams or oysters, they have to monitor constantly so we're not eating the bacteria content of those shellfish. Otherwise, if there's a spill, like one of those wastewater spills that we're probably going to get because it's raining, you know, then they will go out. If they get there's been a spill, they will go out and monitor it until it reaches about 500 units, and then they'll stop. So there's just these episodes where they come in, they monitor for bacteria, and they stop. So at any point, if you wanted to go into the lagoon in Titusville right now where there's been a bloom, and you just know that there's still water, and you know it's got bacteria in it, you're really risking it. Nobody's monitoring bacteria up there. If it doesn't have a regulatory requirement, they're not monitoring it. So it's a tough thing to answer. I would say there are places in the lagoon I would swim now. I would swim in certain areas. And there are certain areas that I will not swim in.
And me too.
And the tributaries, the rivers and streams and canals are where you really need to avoid it, because that's where the bacteria is coming in, and it's measurable. It's measurable. And we've had, you know.
And think about, I mean, for your own safety. I mean, obviously, don't put your face in the water. Don't, you know, and if you have a cut or an open sore or something like that, you don't want to go in. But I've been, you know, unfortunately, with all the social distancing, I've got to do something. So
yes,
I've been kayaking and I've been paddleboarding and I've enjoyed the lagoon in certain areas.
Good.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about socially distancing because I am
socially distanced the best I can. And one of the things, I just wanted to bring this up, and I'm not even sure that it's part of it, but I was part of the Lagoon Loyal program that I think FIT or somebody is supporting right now.
Brevard County,
where they're actually giving you points, right? So you do certain things. So it's a really good checklist or a really good reminder of some of the things that we should be doing, habits, attitudes, things that we should be looking at. And you just go to lagoonloyal.com, and that's a really great website
to go.
Simple
things like looking out for septic tanks that are leaking, picking up after your dog. fertilizer.
Yeah, like really simple stuff.
Grass clippings, like you said. I mean, getting a rain barrel. Simple things that we can all be doing. So what else can we be doing as humans to help the Indian River Lagoon? Because we have so many people that are talking about doing things, but then they'll ask, well, what are you doing with the sales tax? Well, are they doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Right. Well, it is... Well, so there are a lot of things you can go to Lagoon Loyal and pick, take your pick of what you want to do or you feel like you can't do them. But, you know, at MRC, we're about science to action. We're about informing people, giving people the power of knowledge so that they can, you know, make a decision as to what kind of a stand they want to take or if they want to advise policy or they want to, you know, get involved in programmatic elements. And sometimes it's just so they can speak intelligently with their neighbors and their family about what's going on with the lagoon, and then they can have that meaningful conversation of, you know, what can we do to prevent those types of impacts. I mean, an easy one that comes to mind is, you know, take your car to a car wash instead of washing it in your driveway, because people don't realize that anything that flows down your driveway, that bubbly water, is full of phosphorus. Phosphorus is one of the things killing the lagoon right now. So a lot of people don't think about, you know, and it leaves their property, you'll watch it go down the street, and where does it empty? Right into that storm drain. Well, that storm drain is going untreated into the lagoon or into the creek that's going into the river that's going into the lagoon. So it's the tributaries, and that we're all drained, our entire state is drained through canals into the coastal area. So it just gets more and more and more concentrated as it goes down Crane Creek or Turkey Creek or whichever, Ogallee River. You know, everybody's yard drains into the creek or into the canal that goes to the creek, that goes to the lagoon, and it gets into the lagoon and it doesn't get out. And so there's been discussion about whether we should open another inlet. You've heard that one before. Right. Let's just dilution's the solution, right? Well, you know, unfortunately, the plant is not even big enough to deal with the dilution anymore because we've contaminated our oceans to the umpteenth level. But also, I mean, it would be really hard for us to put an inlet large enough to generate enough energy in the North Indian River Lagoon near like Cocoa Beach or the port, because Merritt Island's in the middle. So all it would do is do some very localized influence. And unfortunately, it might be a negative influence. It might end up pulling. Banana River has got a tremendous amount of muck, okay? Tremendous feet of muck in it. Do we want that muck on our beaches? If we connect the lagoon to the ocean, that's not a one-way conversation.
Yeah.
Do we want to now put the brown tide and the green tide and those lovely algae blooms and the black male on the beach? So we're going to destroy both of our tourism attractions in Brevard?
Makes no sense.
I don't think so. So until we know for sure that we can get a one-way charge, so to speak, a one-way flow of water that's going to have any kind of meaningful effect, it's not worth the squeeze, right? It's going to cost tens of millions of dollars. The permitting would be a nightmare. There's potential emergency response issues, and, you know, is the impact going to be worth it? So I know everybody wants there to be an easy answer. The easy answer is that it's going to take our community changing, our society changing, us controlling. We need to stop putting 50 houses on the floodplain, you know, right on top of each other. You know, controlling, I mean, I hate to say it, but smart growth, you know? Controlling growth in a way that's meaningful so the people that live here have a better quality of life.
Actually, we have to put the environment first. Think about what we're doing, right? We don't see that a lot.
We should be putting quality of life first.
I mean, leave a footprint for our grandchildren that we actually want to see a better earth. Mm-hmm. You're right. They're putting all these houses and, you're paying an impact fee and all this stuff, but really and truly the congestion that you're causing on the roadways... And where all this water is going, it's right into the lagoon.
Yeah, and all those septic tanks. So if they're putting a septic tank in a floodplain, it's underwater. So there's no treatment. So it's just, you know. So
and I found out from my pool, just using my pool as an example, I had those marble chips in the back.
Okay, yes.
And my pool water got phosphorus because of the marble chips. So I was like, I wonder how many people are decorating with marble chips, and that could be another runoff issue.
Huh.
You know, so I mean, I was just kind of like click, 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 because I got involved with the Lagoon Loyal program as for businesses
so it makes you
as
think.
Well. And that's the whole thing about the Lagoon Loyal program and shows like this is, you know, we have to be reminded of what we're doing. And to your point, Cedi, your carbon footprint of making sure that you understand what impact
and nutrient footprint.
So let's tell our listeners who we're speaking with. We're speaking with Dr. Lisa Soto, who is the executive director of the Marine Resource Council. She did grow up in Florida, not just in Brevard. And our show is fun and unscripted, and we're just having a conversation about something we all care about, the Indian River Lagoon, Because some of us get really anxious and we get upset when we drive over the bridge or we see what's going on with the lagoon. So what's the update right now with the lagoon? I mean, what else can we be doing? Because a report card is coming out.
Yeah.
And what are we supposed, what do you think we'll see on that report card?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know? Yeah. You're going to have to come and see.
Yes.
So we have had, you know, we didn't get the brown tide this year. We got that lovely pea soup green green tide. And now we're starting to see fish kills. So I actually have, you know, I've been talking to people recently. About the fish kills that we're seeing, and it is you know, what happens is that you'll get a big algae bloom like we've had, and then when things start to get still or it ends up in a canal, the algae will die. When the algae dies, the biological decomposition of all those little alga cells, and there's billions and billions of them, pulls the oxygen out of the water column. So there's no dissolved oxygen, which is what fish need. So the fish pretty much just suffocate.
Yeah.
Especially, and that's why you see them in canals. You'll see these fish kills will happen in these isolated areas because it'll be like the entire canal will flip and go anoxic, we call it, when there's no dissolved oxygen. It'll go anoxic in just a few hours, and the fish will literally suffocate and die right there. So we're starting to see that happen with this recent green tide, so to speak, this very large algae bloom we've had for months and months that's gone from up north towards Titusville, all the way down to Melbourne. So, you know, covering 40 miles or so of lagoon in this just pea green. So now that it's starting to die, we're starting to see the fish kills, yeah. But not anything like 2016.
So how did COVID-19, this dreadful COVID-19, how did it affect, number one, the fundraising effects for the Indian River, for the Marine Resource Council, and volunteers?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I started to say that, you know, we reach our people with events every couple of months. We'll have some kind of a fun event. And one reason is just to reconnect and to keep people's spirits high at the time, you know, when things aren't going well. And then the other thing is that's where we get the majority of our unrestricted donations is through events. So we missed, you know, three of our major events, which is probably putting us about $45,000 under our typical fundraising goal.
One of the BMW places, the one I look forward to.
Right.
And I drink. I go there for my son.
Margaritas for mangroes.
Yeah. So how can we help?
Event.
Can you give our listeners the website? So maybe if they can't donate, they can give it to someone, tell someone. I mean, it's important that we take care of this, our lagoon.
Thank you. All of us
have vested interest in it.
Yeah, so you can still get involved. We've got some volunteer opportunities. We have storm drain marking, which you can do on your own. You can come pick up a kit, and education coordinator Nicole Broquet will explain how you do that. Or you can do mangrove gardening. Again, social distancing. You will come and train you how to do it. You can come on your own time by yourself or with another person, however you want to do that. We still have volunteer opportunities. Go to our website, SaveTheIRL, stands for SaveTheIndianRiverLagoon.org, SaveTheIRL.org. You can apply for volunteer opportunities or contact one of the team by going to our team page and seeing who you want to work with. And then you can donate there. You can be part of the report card. We're just accepting love donations to watch it on through the webinar. That'd be great. We're expanding our education programs. In the summer, we'll be doing day-long day camps and after-school programming starting in September to enhance middle school students' STEM skills by immersing them in the Indian River Lagoon. And, you know, just get involved. We've got restoration programs. We've got education programs. And we do science. We're doing a big groundwater study. And we're continue to do Lagoon Watch. So we've got lots of opportunities to volunteer and still maintain social distancing.
Right. What about partnerships? Are you partnering with anyone?
We are always partnering with people.
So if somebody wants a partner, they own a business, and they survived COVID, they can just go on the website and sign up.
Yep. Yeah, we have had, you know, usually we were partnering with all kinds of restaurants for our events, but we've had to, of course, cut back on that. But even the report card is a private, non-profit partnership. You know, we partner with Applied Ecology. They are a private consulting firm on that project, and we couldn't do it without them.
And don't forget, as Lagoon Loyal, you can sign up as a business and be one of those businesses that gives out a free coupon or a 10% off or whatever you'd like. And you get that by doing activities that keep our lagoon safe.
So. Right. So, you know, the Marine Resource Council was founded in 1983 because you guys took science and turned it into action.
Right.
So if there are people out there who are still skeptical about science, what do you say to them? Because you're seeing it firsthand. We've had people that say, I don't believe in science. But, I mean, when you hear something like that, what do you think?
Well, I'm a scientist, so I don't really understand.
Like, it's like my husband, right? Like my husband's a scientist. My husband's a scientist, right? And he's like, I can't understand it because it's common sense that when you see something happening with the Indian River Lagoon, right away that science kicks off in your brain and you're like, well, this is happening because of nitrogen and phosphorus. It's happening because human behaviors have to change. And you start thinking about all these things.
Yeah, kind of. It's an interesting question. I always would like to explore that person's mindset, right? Like, what is it about science you don't believe? Do you not believe in going to doctors, or, you know, where's the line? Is it just environmental science that you don't believe? Is it all science? Do you believe in dinosaurs? Where's the line?
Right, and I think a lot of what happened is that people started not trusting sources. I don't know that they don't believe in science. That's just my opinion. Uh-huh. I just think that they stopped trusting some of the sources of where they were getting information from. But
yeah, and that's science's problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Marine Resource Council has always been fantastic about the quality.
So, Lisa, you've always loved exploring the water and the ecosystems. Tell our listeners why this is the passion you've had for life.
Yeah.
What was it about water and exploring the ecosystems that
selfishly driven, right? I grew up in South Florida. I loved the ocean. I loved canoeing, kayaking. I was a sailor. So it was, you know, I loved the water. And in this state, if you don't love the water, then you're missing out, right? Florida is a water state. So it was really that. And watching it, you know, again, in South Florida, watching the environment, my quality of life get worse and worse and worse as more and more and more people moved into my little town, actually 5 times the population it has now as when I was a kid there. So that's when, you know, I went off to Florida State and Tallahassee with the dedication environmental science before it even existed.
Goodness. Water.
And I've been driven ever since.
Yeah, and
it's,
you know,
worth fighting for.
I think before people move to Florida from other states, they should have a questionnaire that says, would you respect the waterways? Would you respect it? They should, because you just can't move to Florida and not understand that our tourism dollars depend on our state and water and beaches and our surroundings, right?
Yes.
It's part of who we are. So give us the website one more time and for people to donate time, energy, and a few bucks.
Thank you. www.savetheirl.org. Check us out.
There's so many questions that we didn't get to, but that's okay, because once somebody wanted to know if she was interested in becoming a marine biologist, what advice would you have for that person?
Don't do it. No, I'm kidding.
Just go to FSU or UF or someplace.
And we've posted all of this information on our Facebook page. Dr. Lisa Soto, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks
and
for having me.
And another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, please tune in next week on Monday, where we start a new December.
Yeah. Thank you.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.